Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movies show. This week on the show, actress Vanessa Kirby, aka Princess Margaret from The Crown, on her remarkable new movie, Pieces of a Woman, now streaming on Netflix. Mark Ryle reviews Wild Mountain Time, God help us, as well as the reimagined Karate Kid Cobra Kai. And well-known chef Nevin Maguire chats to me about his favourite movie. I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me, screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com, the News Talk app, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. right here on News Talk. Good weekend to you all. Hope you're doing well. What a strange week it was. We entered another very severe lockdown. The schools didn't reopen. America went on fire. It snowed every day where I was. It was a strange week, but I hope you're getting through it all as best you can. And let's take some comfort in the small screen and indeed the big screen while we all stay at home and do our bit. Now, I often talk to you about the TV I've watched on Netflix or Sky Atlantic or Amazon or whatever, and it's important to mention our state broadcaster when they do the state some service, and indeed they did this week, particularly with Marion, a wonderful documentary about the sadly departed Marion Fanucane. Now, this really wasn't what I thought it was going to be, because I thought it would be a good documentary about that pioneering journalist that Marion Fanucane was, with, you know, clips of talking heads, people talking about what she did over her years broadcasting. But it wasn't that. There was only one talking head, and that was her husband, John Clark, talking about the life they had together. And they had a very unusual life in some ways together. They were both married before they met, and they decided at some point that their life was going to be less ordinary. And at one point in the documentary, John talks about, you know, not deciding we'd join bridge clubs and golf clubs respectively, and they travelled a lot, and they had this wild open house in Westmeath. And John kind of narrated her working life and the time that they spent in South Africa, work that they did with very sick children, dying children around AIDS. And there was a powerful scene which had been broadcast before, but where a bench or a seat is dedicated to their child who sadly passed away very young. And it was John Clark who really grounded the whole thing, discussing their lives and being very honest about his own grief and just some of the phrases he used about the morass that he felt inside himself. And the way he talked about Marion was so refreshingly honest and real and intriguing. It was really a brilliant documentary, and it was also beautifully shot. They took a lot of time. It was a mini movie in some ways, and they just had scenes of Ireland whenever she was on the radio showing how she was broadcasting to a nation, the length and breadth of a nation. It was brilliantly done, and I recommend you watch it if you haven't seen it on the RT player. That's Marion. Now, I should also mention, I was delighted to see the return of the Tommy Tiernan show with, quite simply, Ireland's funniest comedian. I don't think there's any question about that. There, I said it. I adore the man. He is the platonic form of humour. And I've always adored his show, the Tommy Tiernan show, this unscripted chat show where he doesn't know who the guests are going to be. And there's been brilliant moments in it over the years. And it started again last Saturday. And there was a really interesting and albeit awkward interview with Andrea Corr. He doesn't know who the guests are. And Andrea Corr admitted that she was kind of uncomfortable and nervous being there. And yet Tommy, you know, wade through it. And it was uncomfortable at times, but also really good TV, it has to be said. And Tommy Tiernan is just great interviewing people. He really is. And the fact that he doesn't know who they're going to be just adds it this kind of frisson to the interviews that you don't get in other interviews, like the ones you hear me do on this show. Anyway, so I really enjoyed the return of Tommy Tiernan, the Tommy Tiernan show, again on RTE. As I say, I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me, screentime@newstalk.com. Do let me know if there's anything you've been watching on TV or anything on movies you've seen recently that you'd like to chat about. I'm open. Now, Pieces of a Woman is a powerful new movie that landed on Netflix on Thursday of this week, the 7th of January. It's all about a woman, Martha, played remarkably well by Vanessa Kirby, who loses her child. And that's not a spoiler, because that's pretty much what the movie centers around and is in the trailer and anything you read about it. And how she deals or doesn't deal with that incalculable loss is really what the movie deals with. Although the first 30 minutes are very much about that loss and about giving birth. And it's a remarkable kind of film. And it sounds very grim, and it is in some ways, but there is a lot going on in this movie. I saw the movie late last year, and I've thought about it a lot since. I was reviewing it on The Hard Shoulder earlier in the week, and I urged Kieran Cudahy, even though the subject matter sounded really dark, that it was well worth a watch. And I would say the same to you. It stars, as I said, Vanessa Kirby, who is remarkable playing Martha. And I do think she's seriously going to be up for Oscar consideration. Without a doubt, I would say, if she's not at least a nominee in this year's Oscars, well, it's a crime. Shia LaBeouf, who's in the news for all the wrong reasons at the moment, being accused of sexual battery by a former girlfriend, plays her husband. If you can separate the man from the actor, he does a great job in this. There's some real world scariness, as he's quite an angry fellow in the movie, and he's a recovering alcoholic, I should say. Now, I should say, I spoke to Vanessa Kirby. This was last year. It was before the recent allegations. And have a listen to this.
I was kind of scared by the movie in a way. I watched it and I went up and I hugged my three kids late last night, even though they were asleep, because it's kind of terrifying. And I mean that as a compliment in a way. Just, it's the great taboo and the way you act it. It's just, it's petrifying in a way. Did that speak to you? Were you frightened by it when you got it, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm so happy that I know it sounds weird, but I'm so happy that it like elicited that kind of response in you. Do you know what I mean? Because I always feel like the movies that I love the most are the ones that make me do something different, you know, or think a different way, or like take action on something. So that was always the intention, and the whole thing terrified me. I mean, I'd never given birth before, and I felt really nervous about doing it, because any woman in a second would be like, well, that's not how it is, you know? And so that was really scary as an actor, because most of the time you have to pretend, you know, with this, I was like, I can't pretend, but I haven't done it. So how the hell am I going to do this? And then obviously, after the birth, which is half an hour in, I also realized I had to understand what it would be like to lose a child at any stage, at any point. And that took like a lot of research and a lot of time with people who had gone through that experience. And that experience is so deep and so difficult, and a lot of everyone's worst fears, you know? And so being with people who had navigated their own worst fears and have come out of it and healed and carried on, and life looks completely different, but they find a way to get through. That then gave me the motivation to try and overcome my own fear about being an actor. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I felt very differently at the end of the filming experience, and feel like this unbelievable respect for people, families, women, and just generally people going through really tough times, and how you navigate that as a human when it feels so lonely and like you're like alone in that.
Yeah. I'm wondering another thing I was thinking about afterwards was your husband's or your partner's character, Shia LaBeouf's, what you thought of him at the end, without giving any spoilers, because I'm not sure what I thought of him. Sometimes I was thinking, Jesus, the poor guy, he suffered this loss. And then his behavior as it went on was, you know, unsettling at times, let's say. And I wasn't sure about when he leaves the stage, so to speak. I'm wondering what your take on him is. Is he on the side of the angels or the demons or somewhere in between, do you think?
Do you know what? It's one of these questions that I think I never allowed myself to think about, because Martha is so unreachable to everybody else. And she's so in her own experience. And it's the same with the birth, really. Like, I was aware of people being in the space with me, but really, like, when I had this incredible privilege of watching someone give birth, before I didn't, I could not have even begun to act it without her. And I saw her go on this like trip, in a way, like this lucid dream trip, you know, where like her body took over, her mind stopped. And I kind of applied, it felt very much like that in a different kind of like vortex, you know, with grief, of like things are passing you by, the world's carrying on, you know, people close to you are doing all sorts of things trying to get you to do something or be a certain way or feel a certain way for them. And so Martha's experience was such a singular experience that I, even now, I can't really speak to anyone else's experience in the movie, because that was her journey. Do you know what I mean? And I almost had to like not, I had to like go on this road. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that. And then I just have to ask, it's another Netflix production, so they won't mind, but as soon as you popped up on screen, and again last night, I was back in The Crown, and I'm wondering, were you, have you been surprised by just the monster that has kind of become? I mean, on our own station, we did a special podcast dedicated to season four. And, you know, Irish people have a weird relationship with the English monarchy for all sorts of boring reasons we won't go into. But we adore it over here, and rightly so. But it's become this juggernaut that on paper might not have necessarily been the thing it's become. You know, a story about the British royal family in the 20th century. And it's become this global phenomenon. Have you been surprised by that?
Yeah, I mean, just like you, honestly, I went into it not knowing really anything about the royal family, not really knowing what I think, thought about them. I was quite apathetic and like nonplussed. And therefore, I thought, we all thought, like, is anyone going to watch a series about the royal family? Like, really? Mm. And that gave it a kind of detachment in a way. Like, we had an amazing time. I loved the part. I loved her. I became so in love with her, where I didn't know anything about her before, like truly, other than that she was the Queen's sister once and maybe... maybe I think she drank too much or something, I knew, but that was about it. And that was even a myth in my mind. So, and then when it came out, we were filming season two, and suddenly it was dawning on us that people were actually bothering to watch it and wanted to.
Yeah.
And kind of, it was like spreading and it was growing. And then Claire came back on, she'd gone off and won her Golden Globe. And she came back to set and she sort of brought the globe in for the crew because she really felt like it was also theirs. And it was just mad. It was at that moment when she came onto set and we were like, whoa, like this is an international thing. And I'm sure it's different for the cast now because they know that season one and two, became kind of grew. And I'm sure it's grown even more with season four, and that's a beautiful thing. And also the fact that it seems like a lot of people are starting from the beginning again.
Yeah.
And so you feel like you are one part of it and you're still a part of it. And that's a lovely feeling.
Yeah. Well, you were fantastic in this movie. And I think maybe you might be showing up to sets in the future with statues and awards for this. So thanks a lot for talking to me.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for watching.
Vanessa Kirby there talking to me about her role in Pieces of a Woman, which is now on Netflix, and it is a remarkable movie. I should say that interview was recorded before the latest round of allegations against Shia LaBeouf that have been in our newspapers for the last while came out. So we didn't get into any of that because we weren't aware of it at the time. But I would like to point out that Vanessa Kirby came out this week in the Sunday Times expressing solidarity for all survivors of physical and domestic abuse, and it's important to say that. Now, Pieces of a Woman was directed by Cornel Mundrezzo, a Hungarian film director. It was also written by his wife, remarkably, and they had some personal connection to this. Here's the director, Cornel. What really struck me was the first 30 minutes, and that I knew what was coming, and I could feel the tension mounting, and it sounds like a really strange thing to say, but I was nearly relieved when the tragedy happened, because I'd been waiting for it for so long, and it was very, you know, you were quite blatant about what was going on, and you were picturing, and it was a very female-led kind of thing. You were clearly trying not to shy away from the difficulty of the birth. Like, you had given the tragedy and leading up to it a lot of time. I presume you were very clear about what you were doing there.
Yeah. I read the script. Also, the script was like 40 pages about the birth. And I learned the complexity of this amazing, beautiful female journey through giving birth for a newcomer. But in the same time, as a father of three, I was always attending also for those moments. And you know, to be a father is not that far to be a filmmaker. So you are an observer, but also you are very much connected to the facts. So what we basically do, we do a long shot. So we expand tremendous film time open, but we really compress real time, like 16 hour story into the 25 minutes. And that was like the way, or that was kind of a manifesto, how we imagine to shoot a bird scene, because birds itself, most of the time, is not for movies. So we try to find our way. We give tremendous freedom for the camera, for the actors, and every layer and complexity was important for that sequence.
Yeah, it was powerful. I'm a father of three as well. And I mean, I think anyone gets the tragedy involved, whether you have children or not. I don't want to give any spoiler, but I was really taken by the very last scene in the movie. And I watched it last night and I'm thinking about it today. And it was, I may have misunderstood it, but it seemed to me to have been, and we don't have to get into it, but it seemed to be purposely vague, that you weren't sure what was being said at the end. Have I got that wrong, or was that your intention?
No, I mean, our intention was like, okay, she's became a stronger person. Martha is a real hero. She finds her way, she tell her truth, she find words to tell her truth, she's creating her own language, mm-hmm. and she's able to hold her mother's hand. Mm-hmm. So we felt that we give her a positive ending, which means she's established a new family. Mm-hmm. And also from the research material, which was tremendous amount of interviews with mothers, and quite a high percentage establish a new baby. Quite soon or later, or with a new family, or with the same family, but it's just move on. And we felt that this is Martha. Martha worked for it. Martha has to get it. Mm-hmm. And that's why we use the last shot with the apple tree and the baby. And then Martha is just in the background and she give a childhood for someone else.
I wasn't sure if the girl in the tree was actually Martha, even though I thought maybe you were making some kind of point there, but let's leave it open to interpretation.
Yes.
And the apple is beautiful as well. More pedestrianly, to work with your wife on this, was that a unusual thing? I mean, you have three children, I have three children. It's a business just to mind the three of them with your wife. So the idea of having to go to work with her every day must be tough, or maybe it was wonderful.
Actually, I mean, she's a true artist and she's a writer, and you know, writer needs loneliness and isolation, and a director needs team and communication. So we are not spending that much time together. Okay. So we really respect our artistic integrity. So she's writing, definitely, and she's amazing, and I'm directing. And sometimes she's coming on set and on stage and be part of it. I gave my notes and comments what she's writing and how, but we are not working too close, and it's really not this kind of 19th century cliche of a psychodrama in between artists.
But that just happens in the movies.
Yes, exactly. But in the same time, I'm very happy to work with a world-class writer all the time who is in home.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the film is fantastic, and it stayed with me since I watched it. I've been thinking about it ever since. So thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you so much.
Cornel Mundrezzo, the director of Pieces of a Woman, talking to me about the movie, which landed on Netflix on Thursday of this week. And as I've been saying, it is well worth a watch. As I mentioned, it was written by his wife, Kata Weber, who is a playwright and obviously a writer and obviously a screenwriter. And I also got to talk to her.
Yeah, for me, the story is about parenting, really, but in a deep, like a wider sense, like parenting and motherhood doesn't just contain people who has children, mm-hmm. or have children, you know?
Yeah, because we're all children.
Yeah, we are all children. And also, I deeply believe that mothers who lose their babies are still mothers, you know? Their longing and their connection to their child can be as deep or even deeper than others who have the chance to live with their children together. So, yeah.
And, you know, I was reading the production notes, and you guys as a couple had experienced some kind of loss. And maybe it's a very obvious question, but was the writing of this some kind of catharsis for you? Is that where it began?
Yes.
Or is that too obvious?
It was a very long road. First of all, I do not want to compare my loss to a tragic home birth because it's really, really deeply different. At the same time, and also when I was starting to deal with this topic, it came the... So there was this Polish theater. They invited to me to write this play. We have been working with them for years. So it was obvious I'm desperately trying to find a material. That time there was a trial case of Agnes Gereb, a pioneer midwife in Hungary.
Okay.
And her case was like whole society was shaken. Like people were, it was so conflicted. Like, you know, people protesting for home birth, others for doctors in hospitals, mm-hmm. if home birth is acceptable at all, whose fault it was. Like it was really traumatic. And I didn't know I had this person. I didn't know. I wanted this material because I felt this factor of taboo in it. Like there is a taboo and we cannot do anything about it. We can only shout and, you know, it's unbearable. It's unbearable and we cannot talk about it. So therefore I wanted to talk about it. But then when I started to write down, and I think Cornel was the one who felt when I was like reading those lines of the dinner scene and he found those notes. Then I started to, like, he told me, okay, like read it out loud. And then I read it out loud and I got so emotional. And then it was this moment when we were like none of us would say, but it was very obvious that there is something else. And then he said like, okay, write it down. We will talk about it. And then I started to collect a lot of material and talk to women and all these things. And also I talked to Agnes Gereb about her experience as a midwife and all these stories. Somehow when I sat down and write, it became quite therapeutic for me. So I felt there is a personal connection and there was something I couldn't talk about. And by writing this, I can.
Yeah. And I was reading as well about the research that you mentioned, and you talk about the great taboo, and it is the loss of a child for so many people is just the most unimaginable pain. And I'm just wondering, like, for you to read testimonies and stories from all these people who've gone through that, it must have been quite exhausting as a research project. Like, it must have taken a lot out of you. I know it would me.
I think what was so surprising that these women had some kind of grace somehow. So they, okay, when they talked about their child, it was so beautiful, full of love. And all of them wanted to have a legacy for their child. Okay. So they never talked about, I mean, of course they talked about the loss and the tragedy, but there was also another part, why this happened and how can I be like, I felt they, you know, they are their better self somehow. Mm. They, there was a meaning in it. And I mean, of course I wish for all of them that this had never happened. But at the same time, all those testimonies were very traumatic, but at the same time, very beautiful. Sure. And I wanted to respect this.
Yeah, well, you certainly did that. The movie is fantastic. So thanks a lot for talking to me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Kata Weber, the writer of Pieces of a Woman, there talking to me. Pieces of a Woman, as I said, is now on Netflix, and it is well worth a watch. Up next, Mark Ryle on the week's new releases and why he loves Karate Kid. Now you're listening to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movie show. It's new release time. It's finally arrived. Wild Mountain Time, the movie that's caused, you know, crimes against accents, is here. We're going to be reviewing that. We'll also give a quick review of Pieces of a Woman, which we talked about earlier in the show. And we'll briefly mention Cobra Kai. More of that anon. Now I turn to the man who put the paddy into wackery. Mark Ryle, how are you?
Hey, John. How's it going?
Good, good. So listen, Wild Mountain Time, I know what I thought of it. Is it as bad as everyone thought it might be?
It's signalling the opening of award season, it's fair to say, I think. I think what happened. John Patrick Shanley saw P.S. I Love You, and then he saw Leap Year, and then he said, hold my pint.
And John Patrick Shelley, by the way, is the man who wrote Moonstruck and won an Oscar for it.
He did.
Like, he is good, you know?
Okay. He also wrote this, he directed it, and he also, like, wrote the play that it was based on. So he was all in on Wild Mountain Thyme.
The play was called Outside Mullingar.
It was.
He probably should have stopped there, right?
No. He probably should have, yeah. It's about two wannabe lovers on neighboring farms who want to be together, but won't be together because of a ditch or gates or something. And she thinks she's a swan. In a nutshell, it's about 1 hour and 40 minutes. And look, I really don't want to kick this lame horse. And of course, I assumed that it was going to be absolutely riddled with bog-trotting paddywhackery, and it is. But I had also kind of hoped that it would be at least watchable and vaguely charming and occasionally funny, and that it couldn't be as bad as the trailer suggested. But in fact, it is so much worse than I could have dreamed possible. It's mesmerizingly awful. It reminded me a bit of that brainwashing tape that Michael Caine is made to watch at the end of the Ipcress file.
Well, here's the thing, right? You see, the crimes against accents and the paddywhackery, I can get over that. I was talking earlier in the week on the Hard Shoulder about this, and I was saying, like, that, it's no big deal. Like, if there was a movie about French people full of, you know, people walking down the Champs-Élysées with onions around their necks singing Vive la France, like, the French wouldn't get that bothered by it, and we shouldn't either about the paddywhackery. But the problem with this is just the story and the movie are crap. Forget about the paddywhackery. There's no plot here of any significance.
There is not, no. I mean, to be fair, nobody walks around with a pig under their arm. But No, it's not far off. Emily Blunt smokes a pipe.
Yeah. She does. Honest, that's not a joke. Emily Blunt does smoke a pipe in this.
She does smoke a pipe, yeah. And at one point she's dancing around barefoot in a green shawl and a red wig. And I just couldn't help thinking of, you know, how De Valera would probably be, I don't know how to put this, aroused by that image. Anyway, look, I'll be honest, I did laugh, but I didn't laugh at any of the things that were intended to be funny. Mm. And I think that this is going to be studied in film schools as a lesson of what not to do when writing a rom-com. Mm. I think future generations of screenwriters are going to pull this script apart like a cadaver that was left to medical science. One of the fundamental tropes of the rom-com, okay, it's the obstacle that's put between the couple that keeps them apart. I mean, when Harry met Sally, it's that they're friends and they don't want to ruin the friendship. And then in The Apartment, it's Shirley MacLaine. She's in love with Fred McMurray and not Jack Lemmon. Mm. But Wild Mountain Thyme doesn't have one. And instead, what we have is Jamie Dornan and Emily Blunt just keep saying that they can't be together over and over and over for no reason whatsoever. And furthermore, Jamie Dornan's character is supposed to be some sort of simpleton. And I know this because Christopher Walken and other characters keep calling him simple over and over. That lad is simple. That there's something wrong with that lad. But Dornan doesn't play him that way at all. And nothing in the script suggests that he is, apart from the fact that everyone keeps calling him this all the time. And it just makes no sense whatsoever.
What is also bizarre is Christopher Walken, who is God to me. I saw him on a stage in Broadway. I went to see a play purposely just so I could see him on stage. I adore him, and it gives me no pleasure to say it, but what was crazy was not only was his accent bad, but it seemed to me at times that he just forgot he was meant to be doing one and sounded like he was in The Deer Hunter at times as well. Like, it was preposterous.
He did seem like he was in pain, and I shared his pain, but I don't think it was anything to do with the fact that the character was supposed to be dying.
No.
But like I said, I don't know how he felt. I mean, the cast is incredible. Even John Hamm, he's a funny guy and he can do comedy really well. I have no idea what attracted so many fine actors to this project. I suppose, I guess my paycheck brings all the boys to the yard. I mean, I hope the money was really, really good.
No, but I wonder though, honestly, is it a domino effect? If you're Jamie Dornan and you hear the Christopher Walken's in a movie, do you just go, yes, and John
Possibly.
Hamm the same? Because I would, you know, if
Possibly.
I was an actor.
Well, I don't know. I would, if we were in that situation, I think I would probably read the script first.
Good point.
I'll finish by saying this, right? I think it's aimed and it's made for third generation Irish Americans who spent a week in Kerry once. And that's fine, right? But I don't want to point fingers at where the money has come from. But what I will say is that I think if the Americans have a thirst for this kind of tripe, then, you know, let the Americans pay for it. I don't think it's something that we should be funding.
No, but interestingly enough, because I was talking about this again earlier in the week, I'm not even sure if most of Irish America would be into this either. Like, John Hamm in an interview about this said, look, we get that there are, you know, people in Ireland who work for Google and all. This is just kind of a folktale and all. So I think Irish America even would have a low tolerance for this kind of crap, to be honest with you. I'm not sure if it would appeal to even them.
Yeah, I think you would be surprised. But it's definitely, okay. Look, it should be, the video cassette should be available from the gift shop Bunratty Castle with a free knit your own Aran sweater kit, you know?
Yeah, throw in free a nipper or something as well. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, stars-wise, what are we going to say?
Oh, I'm going to give it one. It is just as awful as you think it's going to be.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a one as well. And I'm not sure if I've ever given a movie a one, but it is that bad.
And just
to really rub salt into the wound, let's take a clip.
Welcome to Ireland. Once upon a time, there were two farms. The Muldoon farm, where Rosemary lived, and right down the road was my farm, where my son Anthony asked his lonely question of the stars.
Why did you make me so?
Rosemary Muldoon.
Yeah!
Besotted with love.
There's these green fields. And there's us, whatever that is, holds me here.
Okay, that was a clip from the lamentable Wild Mountain Time, which is, we should have said, Mark, it's available on like iTunes and Google Play. People can see for themselves this weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Okay, now let's move on to something that I thought was 1,000 times better, and which we spent a bit of time on the show already because I had Vanessa Kirby and the director of Pieces of a Woman on, which is, to my mind, a remarkable movie, which is on Netflix as of Thursday of this week, the 7th of January. Mark, what did you make of Pieces of a Woman?
You have probably already covered the fact that it was the screenwriter Katja Wieber and Cornel Mundruzzo, they had a very personal experience of losing a child together, and that's kind of what's the source of the project was. In a nutshell, it's set over a 6-month period, and Vanessa Kirby and Shia LaBeouf play white collar Martha and blue collar Sean, and they're a young couple expecting their first child. She comes from money, and her mother is played by Ellen Burstyn, is holding the purse strings in the background. And Martha is intent on having a home birth, but then as she goes into labour, their chosen midwife is double booked and a replacement arrives. And it begins with this very, very impressive, lengthy single take scene that starts with Martha's waters breaking and then ends 20 minutes later with the paramedics arriving when all does not go well with the home birth. And it is an unbearably tense opening scene that the rest of the movie, it really does try to live up to, but it kind of falls ever so slightly short. But that's not a bad thing. It's probably just as well, because Pieces of a Woman, it makes for an incredibly tense viewing experience, often to an unpleasant degree. And it is certainly not an easy watch, but it is very, very worthwhile.
Yeah, and you say it doesn't live up to what happens in the first 30 minutes. I mean, I disagree, because I think the power of the movie is Martha's journey after this tragedy, and also her relationship with Shia LaBeouf, who, as I mentioned earlier, is in the news for all the wrong reasons. But he is, you know, if you can separate what's going on in his life and the awful things he's alleged to have done, he is very good in this as a husband struggling.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, I don't want to... I don't really want to discuss LaBeouf at the moment, first because I don't want to diminish at all from Vanessa Kirby's role here in the slightest, because and also because he's made it kind of impossible to bring him up without mentioning his extracurricular activities, and it's not really my job. But what I will say is that I think it seems that the industry is slowly, finally coming around to the idea that it's not okay to placate bad behavior behind the camera, regardless of the quality of the work in front of the camera. I'll leave it at that, but just on Vanessa Kirby, she is amazing. It is a very, very unshowy performance, and at times it's very difficult to read the emotions that she's going through. In certain scenes, she comes across as almost something from another planet that's studying human behavior and not quite being able to work it out. It's a very, very natural performance, and she doesn't fall back into cliche, and that's great, because I think the grief of losing a child, it's a deeply personal thing, and it's really knowable only by those that have gone through it, and I think Kirby is just extraordinary in the role.
Yeah, she's brilliant, and she was on the show earlier. Now tell me this: what would you say stars wise for Pieces of a Woman?
I think it's an easy 4. It's a very emotional, incredibly powerful piece of work, this.
Yeah, well, I'd give it 4 as well, without question. I was considering a 5, but definitely a 4. So that's Pieces of a Woman, now available on Netflix. And then finally, now, we don't usually do TV, but it was just something you said to me the other day on our numerous phone calls. I mean, we're in touch all the time, listeners. I barely get out of bed without ringing Mark at some stage. But you're a big fan of Cobra Kai, which is this TV series following on the teenage participants of the original Karate Kid, now in later life, and season 3 just ended, or just launched,
just,
I should say.
Just
Netflix.
Launched, yeah. I was a big fan. Okay. This was one of my big pleasant surprises of last summer. Cobra Kai, it started out very inauspiciously as a YouTube original, and then it was bought by Netflix, and they launched the first 2 seasons last summer. As you say, the 3rd season has just been released since the 1st of January. So I would imagine that most people who are into it have already hoovered up the new 10 episodes. On paper, it sounds like a really, really bad idea. The premise is that Cobra Kai takes Johnny Lawrence, who was the bad guy from the Karate Kid, the 1984 movie, and it makes him the good guy. And it tells the story from his perspective. And from his perspective, Daniel LaRusso was the bully, and he was the guy who stole his girlfriend, and he was the guy who ruined his life. And now, you know, 35 years later, he is trying to pick up the pieces of his miserable existence.
Yeah. Now, here's the funny thing, and they're the original actors, which is, you know, which is great. I was surprised that you liked this so much, because I loved The Karate Kid when I saw it as a kid, and I liked 2 and 3 to lesser degrees, but I loved The Karate Kid. And then I watched the first 3 of Cobra Kai, and of the first series, and I just had to leave it, because I had the exact same sensation, and the same thing with The Greatest American Hero, that I loved as a kid, about the guy who gets the Superman suit, or the superhero suit, and is able to use it and can't use the suit. And then when you rewatch it now, you go, oh yeah, this isn't actually very good. And I had that feeling watching Cobra Kai, so I was surprised you like it as much as you did, certainly the first season.
I tell you exactly why I like it. It's because of William Zabka. I think he's a revelation. Now, don't make it like it is. I don't believe in the concept of guilty pleasures. I think if you enjoy something, then don't feel guilty about it. But Cobra Kai, it's designed to be a guilty pleasure. It's a double cheese sandwich with an extra cheese and a slice of cheesecake for afters, you know. But what Johnny Lawrence, he's just comedy gold. And he's a guy who stopped developing in 1984, and he doesn't get any cultural references before or after the 1980s. And the script, as far as he goes, is really, really funny. And Billy Zabka, he's unexpectedly really good at comedy. But I have to say, in the first 2 series, especially the first series, it did a really good job of balancing the focus between Zabka and Ralph Macchio with the new younger cast. Mm-hmm. But as it has gone on, the attention has shifted more and more to the new younger characters, and some of the younger cast are very good and some not so much. And the 3rd season definitely gives too much attention to the not so much. And it is kind of turned into the OC or Dawson's Creek, I suppose, if Katie Holmes and Misha Barton kept kicking the crap out of each other. And to be honest, I'm really not here for the OC bits.
You're definitely not.
I'm there for Billy Zabka trying to work out how to use a laptop in a denim vest. You know, that's what I'm investing
Aren't
in.
Aren't we all, you know, Aren't whatever we we're watching, you know?
Exactly.
So listen, you would be saying then, for people who haven't caught up with Cobra Kai, certainly the first season and a bit of the second one, but not the 3rd.
It's still worth watching, but I think there's a noticeable dip in quality in the 3rd season.
Okay. Mark, you are my Mr. Miyagi. Thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
Mark Royal there, talking to me about Cobra Kai on Netflix. Also Pieces of a Woman, which we had spent a lot of time on earlier in the show, for which he also gave 4 stars. And the lamentable Wild Mountain Time, now available on video on demand. Up next, Nevin Maguire on his favourite movie. Now you're listening to Screen Time News Talks TV and Movie Show. It's that stage of the week where we talk to someone well known about their favourite new movie. Nevin Maguire is quite simply one of Ireland's best known chefs, and he was back on our TV screens this week with the show Seafood Trails on RT1, and last year saw huge publishing success with his book Midweek Meals. I'm delighted to say he's on the line now. Hello, Nevin.
John, how are you? And good afternoon to you and all your listeners. I hope it's a good one for us.
Yes, let's park all that stuff for a while.
So yeah, tell me this, your favorite movie, what have you opted for?
You know, I don't really watch a lot of movies, and I suppose with my work, I'm working at nighttime and maybe Monday, Tuesday's my kind of days off, you know, well, that was in the real world. And Shawshank Redemption would be one of them. I've watched it quite a few times and I just love that movie. I just think it's a very powerful movie, and Morgan Freeman, he's such an excellent, wonderful actor. I just like the storyline, and it ends up like, you know, he was jailed, I think, 2 life sentences.
Yeah.
You know,
this is the Tim Robbins character.
That's it. Oh, yeah. You know your actors, so you
I do.
You
do.
Know,
sorry, yeah.
I have to clarify to you and to your listeners that I'm not an expert in movies.
That's so okay. You can't be an expert in everything.
If you had have asked me about maybe some of the food shows on Netflix, maybe I might be a wee bit better at that. But no, there's something really, really nice. I mean, like, he goes to prison and obviously he escapes, and just the way he does it is so clever. The way he bores a hole through the wall, and I just think it's a fabulous movie. I really, 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 I've watched it quite a few times.
And it's a very hopeful movie. And, you know, I've been doing this show a couple of years now, and it's come up a few times as people's favourite movie, because I just think it's that, you know, he's in such a dark place for so long, and then this glorious escape at the end.
Do you know, John, you said something very powerful there, like hopeful, and that's what we all need. You know, we all are in a dark place at the minute, and hope is what we need, and we will get through this. And I think you have to hold your nerve, you have to bide your time, and just, I suppose, it actually, there's a lot in it that kind of like, that we can take from it at the moment. Do you know what I mean? As you said, you know, he was... you know, he had to go to jail. He didn't do the murder. He was kind of set up, and yet he did escape. And him and Morgan Freeman, they became best friends, which I thought was a really lovely story. And it took him a while to kind of break in. He kept to his own, you know, to himself for a very long time. And it's very interesting that a lot of guests you've had on, it's their favorite movie, because certainly it's definitely one of mine. I've watched it quite a few times.
And it will interest you to know that it's on that internet movie database thing. It is the most popular movie of all time by fans.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there you go. So you're in good company. You and the rest of the world can't be wrong, Nevin, you know?
Do you know, well, do you know, there's just something really nice about it, and the fact that it ends up, you know, happy for him, because he was put through the mill. You know, he was kind of abused in the prison, and, you know, he really had to hold his nerve, for the want of a better word. And, you know, I just think he's a great actor. He's kind of just kind of like a real kind of serious, intense guy. And, you know, I think the two of them bounce off one another. And yeah, I think I just think there's a really nice story, the way he set up the library. And, you know, I just think there's a lot of good things that we can take from it. And certainly it touched me. And it's a one that if you were to ask me what's your all-time movie, that's definitely
and as you say, it might be one for this dark January. I mentioned Seafood Trails. This is the third season of it now, and you know well that, you know, shows don't always get renewed. Why has it been so popular, do you think?
Well, thank you for that. I mean, like, first of all, we're an island, and I mean, John, when I go out and on the fishing boats and I meet fishermen, and you just see, as a chef, now I'm talking about, you just see how hard they work, and you got to appreciate that it's a very tough life being a fisherman in all different weather conditions. We're an island. I think we're getting better at eating fish, but we need to be eating more fish, if you know what I mean. We export an awful lot. And I suppose now, at the moment, there's never been a better time. A lot of people are cooking at home. There's a huge interest in food. People have reconnected and want to know where their food's coming from, and seasonality. They're very important messages. For me, I feel very lucky, and Borbee are the main sponsors, John, of the show, and they've been extremely good to me. So I have to say that fair play to them, and the great work. Like, there's some great characters and great stories within the food producers, within the chefs that I meet, within the fishermen. We're in a good time in Irish food, and I know it's difficult for everyone at the minute. I definitely can accept that. But I think, regards the safety and standards of Irish food and seafood in particular, it's some of the best in the world. Our waters are pristine, and that's why, like, I mean, like, a year ago we would have been exporting live lobsters, crab, to China. which is incredible. Yeah. And to Dubai, to all, because they want the freshness and the quality of our seafood and shellfish is some of the best in the world. It's just lovely to see it, because I've done other shows, John, where I've gone to Spain and Italy.
Yeah.
And the way they eat is very seasonal. They eat fish an awful lot. We're very lucky. We have fantastic dairy and meat and fish. So we have it all on our doorstep. We really are so lucky.
We certainly do. And it seems to me that might be the key of how you do food on TV, which you do very well. You talked about the stories of the fishermen, because it can't be just a series of recipes. And you've kind of mastered that, the idea of getting the story behind how the food comes to us, I guess.
You're absolutely right, because these are people who are very passionate, and whether like one of the shows on this week, like we go to Clew Bay and Mayo, mm-hmm. and like, and he's, you know, dredging scallops, and there's this bad reputation for dredged scallops, but he says, no, we have a special a piece of equipment on the back of the boat. He explains it to me, and then I'm happy with that, because like, it's kind of dredging the seabed, but it's only picking the certain size scallops. So in fairness, you know, to BIM, they're actually very, very good at protecting the smaller kind of shellfish, if you know what I mean. And yeah. I think that's really, really important, because sustainability is everything. And that's the rock which will perish on if we don't look after our environment, our whole eco-culture, all that. Like, we're surrounded by sea, so we're very, very lucky where we're located, you know, that we do export a lot. And I mean, like, more and more people, as I say, are cooking at home. So I suppose there is lovely stories when you meet these people that are passionate, who care about what they do. And I'm learning too, John. Don't forget that. I mean, like, yeah. I'm saying, wow, this is really interesting. I didn't know this. So I'm hugely respectful. So I am.
And tell me this, Nevin. I mean, this is a film and TV show. You are a chef, but you have this other life as a TV personality and a personality. Were you always comfortable with the camera? Or was it like, oh my God, how am I going to do this?
I remember I got my break in television and Open House, and it was a live show with Marty Whelan and Mary Kennedy. So I was the resident chef every Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Sure, I was as nervous as anything. And, you know, I'm very relaxed. I'm just myself, and I try and give people inspiration. I try and keep the recipes very simple. And I want people to look at, when I'm doing my recipes, that, wow, I can make that. I can do that. They're not chefy. They're not overcomplicated. Yeah. I mean, like, when they come to my restaurant, that they get a food experience. But at home, we cook very simply. And now more than ever, John, the main meal is the main event of the day.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, what's for dinner? What are we going to do? So I think there's something really, really, I really enjoy doing the television work. I wouldn't give up the kitchen if you were to ask me to pick between both, to be honest with you. But I do love, because I'm learning all the time as a chef, whether it's from other chefs who you meet, you're looking at how creative, like how, you know, just creative they can be in the kitchen, what they do with ingredients. So for me, and then when you meet the producers and the fishermen, I mean, you know, they're just really, really passionate about what they do. And I always ask the fishermen, you know, what's your favorite fish? 95% of them will say haddock to me, which I find really interesting.
Wow.
It's the fish that they love, so they do. And some of the fishermen don't even eat fish, which obviously I never show that on TV.
No, of course,
because
not.
That wouldn't do. But like, I'm
the DVD extras.
That's it, the offcuts. So, John, like, I'm from a family of nine, and like, I think maybe three of my family don't eat fish. But I used to be a bit of a monkey when I was very young as a chef. I used to run after them with live lobsters and monkfish and John Dory, and they're not the prettiest of fish.
No.
So I kind of hold my hands up. I might have been to blame for that. So it's a bit of fun. It's a
absolutely
bit of fun.
Well, listen, let me ask you finally, as I have you here, I'm going to be personal here for a second.
Yeah.
We have entered lockdown. I have three small children, as I tell listeners all the time, aged 8, 5, and 2. My wife is in a full-time job working from home. Well, people don't call this working, but let's say I'm very busy with my hobbies here at News Talk. So life is very busy for us, and maybe for other listeners as well who are in a similar situation. Like, by the time the business of the day is done, homeschooling, doing our jobs, changing the kids' nappies, it's so tempting for me personally to put pizzas in the oven. Have you any advice to kind of keep the food going during certainly January?
Do you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think we're very hard on ourselves. This is a difficult time for each and every one of us. And even for me, like, I cook professionally. I love cooking at home. But there's days that, you know, you get up and you think, oh God, you know. I mean, like, I do have frozen pizzas. I'm not going to lie to you. But then
I'm delighted to hear it.
No, I do. I do. They're from Simply Better. So they're made in Italy. And then what I do is put extra tomato sauce. I put some Parma ham. I put a little bit of mozzarella on that and whatever's in the fridge. And I let the twins do that. So, you know, listen, you have a young family. And my family now, the twins, they're 9. So I'm trying to get them a little bit involved in the cooking right. process, having a bit of fun too, which is really important. But like keeping things simple. And you know, it's a great investment because this is the time of year. It's a slow cooker.
Yeah.
So you can. So when most people are working at home, that you can throw something into it and it'll cook away during the day when people are working at home, you're minding the kids, you're news talk, you know, you're trying to balance a lot of things. And there's something beautiful about the smell of food cooking yeah. at home. There's just something that reminds us of our mothers or grandmothers. That's I think it's a great investment. So in the new book that you mentioned, there's a full chapter, which is the first time I've ever done this in any of the books. And what I'll do, John, I'll give you a couple to give out to your listeners as a little giveaway. Okay.
And wonderful.
You can let me know the details. Pleasure. Absolute pleasure for you, my friend. And we'll do that. And so it really connected with people. This has been my most successful book. And remember, I've wrote 16 cookbooks. So, you know, it's not that I'm kind of running out of recipes. So if you have anything up your sleeve.
You're okay. Asking the wrong man.
I'm only joking. Listen. Just keep it simple and cook with the seasons. This is the time of year mm-hmm. now. The weather is cold. So something like a nice stew is delicious. It's good value. I tend to cook in batches. So I cook maybe for a couple of hours and then I've not done enough for maybe 2 or 3 days, or I freeze it down. And that could be mince. That can be a stew. I made a lovely monkfish curry this week, you know, and I made it for 2 days. So I'm lucky that my twins, they're good little eaters, so they are, and they have been from a very young age. And my best advice to any parent is, just give the kids the same food that you're eating. That's so important.
And yeah.
There's nothing wrong with a frozen pizza. Don't worry about that. It's just not every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is wonderful here. You've really cheered me up. He is quite simply a culinary institution, not to make him sound like a building. His favourite movie is The Shawshank Redemption. Nevin Maguire, thank you so much.
John, pleasure, and a happy new year again to you and all your listeners. And keep cooking. Look after yourself.
Whatever mistakes I made, I paid for them, and then some. That hotel, that boat, I don't think that's too much to ask.
I don't think you ought to be doing this to yourself, Andy. I mean, Mexico is way the hell down there, and you're in here, and that's the way it is.
Yeah, right. That's the way it is. It's down there, and I'm in here. I guess it comes down to a simple choice, really. Get busy living, or get busy dying.
A clip there from The Shawshank Redemption, as chosen by Nevin Maguire. And I should mention, he kindly offered to give away a couple of books of his Midweek Meals. So if you'd like to win a copy of Midweek Meals by Nevin Maguire, simply text the word Nevin, followed by your name, to 53106. And the wonderful Anne-Marie Kane will pick some winners later in the week. That is it for this week. Leave you with some music. This week I'm going to leave you with some music from the TV as opposed to the movies, if that's okay, because True Detective, the first season, was remarkable television. The second season wasn't so good. The third one was better. But it has a great soundtrack, and it has this wonderful song by Lucinda Williams called Are You All Right? So I will leave you with that. I will remind you that this show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. right here on Newstalk. I'm open all week long on Twitter, John_Farty, or you can email me, screentime@newstalk.com. Have a great weekend and stay safe.
Are you all right? All of a sudden you went away. Are you all right? I hope you come back around someday. Are you alright? I haven't seen you in a real long time. Are you alright? Could you give me some kind of sign? Are you alright? I looked around me and you were gone. Are you alright? I feel like there must be something wrong. Are you alright? 'Cause it seems like you disappeared. Are you alright? 'Cause I've been feeling alone. Is there something been bothering you? Are you alright? I wish you'd give me a little clue. Are you alright? Is there something you wanna say? Are you alright? Just tell me that you're okay. Are you alright? 'Cause you took off without a word. Are you alright? You flew away like a little bird. Are you alright?